Begin this cassette by adjusting the balance control to the full left position. If using the book cassette adapter, place it in the A position.
General Curson cleared his throat.
Precautions, Lord Rawl. What precautions are there to be taken? Do you have another cure for the men, for the people of the city?
Richard rubbed his fingertips on his forehead as his eyes turned to the desk before him. No, General, I have no cures, he whispered. Everyone heard his words, though. It was that silent in the room.
Then what?
Richard straightened himself.
What we need to do is separate the men, disperse them. My brother has seen the plague before and has read of great plagues in the past. We believe that it's possible that it spreads from person to person, much as when one person in a family has a sore throat, chest congestion, and stuffed nose, then the others in the family, from their proximity to the sick person, come down with the same illness.
I've heard that the plague is caused by bad air in a place,
one of the officers in the back put in.
I am told that this, too, is possible, Richard said. I have also been told that it could be caused by any number of other things. Bad water, bad meat, heated blood.
Magic?
Someone asked. Richard shifted his weight. That, too, is a possibility. It is said by some that it could be a judgment by the spirits on our world, and a punishment for what they find. I myself don't believe such a thing. I've been out this afternoon seeing innocent children suffering and dying. I can't believe that the spirits would do such a thing, no matter how displeased. General Baldwin rubbed his chin.
Then, what do you think it is that spreads it, Lord Raw?
I'm no expert, but I lean toward my brother's explanation that it's like any other sickness, that it can be passed from person to person through odors in the air or close contact. This makes the most sense to me, although this sickness is much more serious. The plague, I am told, is almost always fatal. If it is, in fact, passed from person to person, then we must not delay. We must do what we can to keep the plague from our forces. I want the men split up into smaller units.
General Curson spread his hands in frustration.
Lord Rowe, why can't you simply use your magic and rid the city of this plague?
Colin touched Richard's back, reminding him to hold his temper. He seemed, though, to have no anger in him.
I'm sorry, but right now, I don't know what magic can cure this plague. I don't know that any wizard has ever before cured a plague through the use of magic.
You have to understand, General, that just because a person can command magic, that doesn't mean that they can stay the keeper himself when the time for his touch has come. If wizards could do that, I assure you, graveyards would vanish for want of clients. Wizards have not the power of the Creator. Our world has balance to it. Just as we all, especially soldiers, can aid the keeper in bringing death, we all can also be a part of the Creator's work of creating life. We know, better than most, perhaps, that soldiers are charged with protecting peace and life itself. The balance to that is that we sometimes must take life to stay an enemy who would do greater harm. For this we are remembered, not for the lives we try to preserve. A wizard, too, must be in balance, in harmony with the world he lives in. The Creator and the Keeper both have a part to play in our world. It is not within the power of a mere wizard to dictate to them what shall be. He can work for events to combine toward a result, a marriage, for example, but he cannot direct the Creator himself to bring forth a life as a result of that marriage. A wizard must remember always that he works within our world, and must do his best to help people, just as a farmer would help a neighbor who has a harvest to bring in, or a fire to douse. There are things a wizard can do that those without magic cannot, much the same as you men are strong and can wield a heavy battle axe, whereas an old man could not. Even though you have the muscle to do this, that doesn't mean that your muscles can do what they aren't meant to do, such as exercise wisdom the old man has from his experience. He may defeat you in battle through his knowledge rather than his muscle. No matter how great a wizard may be, he could not bear a new life into this world. A young woman without magic, experience, or wisdom could do such a thing, but he could not. Perhaps she has more to do with magic than he, in the end. What I'm trying to tell you, men, is that just because I have been born with the gift, that doesn't mean that the gift can stop this plague. We can't depend on magic to solve all our problems. Knowing the limitations of his power is just as important for a wizard as knowing the limitations of his men is for an army officer. Many of you have seen what my sword can do against the enemy, yet as awesome a weapon as it is, it cannot touch this invisible enemy. Other magic may prove as impotent.
In your wisdom we are humbled, General Kersen quoted softly from the devotion.
Men voiced their agreement and nodded at the logic of Richard's explanation. Colin was proud of him, that at least he had convinced them. She wondered if he had convinced himself.
It's not so much wisdom, Richard murmured, as it is simple common sense.
Please be assured, all of you, he went on, that that doesn't mean I have no intention of trying to find a way to end this plague. I am looking into every possible means of stopping it.
He laid a hand on Verdine's shoulder. She glanced up.
Verdine is helping me with the old books from Wizard's Past to see if they left us any wisdom. If there is a way for magic to stop it, then I will find that way. For now, though, we must use other means at our disposal to protect people. We need to have the men split up.
Split up, and then what? General Kersen asked.
Split up and get out of Aiden Drill. General Kersen stiffened. The links of his chainmail reflected the lamplight so that he seemed to sparkle like a vision of a spirit.
Leave Aiden Drill undefended?
No, Richard insisted, not undefended. What I propose is to have our forces divide up so there is less chance of the plague spreading among them and move to separate positions around Aiden Drill. We can put detachments of our forces at all the passes, all the roads and access valleys. That way, no force can advance against us.
What if one does? General Baldwin asked. Then those smaller, separate forces may be insufficient to drive off an attack.
We will have sentries and scouts. We'll have to increase them so that we don't have any surprises. I don't think there are any forces of the Order this far north yet, but if any attack does come, then we will have warning and can gather our forces quickly. We don't want them too far apart to be able to defend the city if they must, but they must be far enough apart to keep from passing the plague throughout the whole of the army. Any ideas you men have would be valued. That's one reason I asked you here. If you have any ideas about any of this, then please feel free to speak up.
Dreffen stepped forward. It needs to be done quickly. The sooner the men are away, the better the chance that none of them will have come in contact with the sickness.
The officers all nodded as they pondered. The men who went with us today should remain here, Dreffen said. They may have come in contact with someone who has the plague. Make a list of any they work closely with and have them isolated here in Aiden Drill too.
We'll see to it at once, General Kersen said. Tonight.
Richard nodded. Each group of our forces must communicate with the others, of course, but messages must be spoken only. No written messages passing from hand to hand. The papers could carry the plague. These men who pass command and messages should talk at a distance, at least the way we are here in this room with me at this end and you at the other.
Isn't that a rather extraordinary precaution?
One of the officers asked.
I have heard, Dreffen said, that people who have the plague but have not yet fallen sick and therefore don't know of their affliction can be detected by the distinctive odor of the plague on their breath.
Men nodded with interest. But to smell that fatal odor would infect you with the plague, and you too would be stricken and die. Mumbling spread back through the men.
That's why we don't want the messengers to get too close to one another, Richard said. If one were to already have the plague, we don't want him spreading it to another group of our forces. There is no use in going to all of this trouble if we aren't scrupulous in our attention to everything. This is a deadly poison. If we act quickly and act as wisely as we know how, we may spare a great many people from death. If we don't take these precautions seriously, nearly every one of the people in this city and every one of our men could be dead within weeks.
Serious, worried talk swept back through the room.
We are giving you the worst look at it,
Drefin said, bringing their attentive gazes back. We don't want to pretend the danger is less than it is, but there are things in our favor. The most important is the weather. The plagues I have seen and read about spread worst in the high heat of summer. I don't think it will be able to get a foothold in the cool weather of this time of year. We have that much. Men sighed with renewed hope. Colin didn't. One other thing, Richard said as he looked from eye to eye. We are Dharans. We are people of honor. Our men will act accordingly. I don't want any of us lying to people about the danger, telling people that there is no risk. And on the other hand, I don't want anyone deliberately panicking people. Everyone will be frightened enough as it is. You are also soldiers. This is no less a battle than if any other enemy attacked our people. This is part of our job. Some of the men will have to stay in the city to help. There may need to be men at arms to hold down any uprising that may be stirred up. If there are any riots, like there were with the Red Moon, I want them put down at once. Use whatever force is necessary, but no more. Remember, the people of this city are our people. We are their protectors, not their wardens. We will need men to help with digging graves. I don't think we can be burning that many dead if the plague gets hot among the population.
How many do you think could die, Lord Rawl?
One of the officers asked. Thousands, Drefin answered. Tens of thousands. His blue-eyed gaze took them all in. If it gets bad enough, more. I read of a plague that in 3 months took the life of nearly 3 of every 4 people in a city of close to 500,000. A low whistle came from an officer in back. One other thing, Richard said. Some people will panic. They will want to run from Adendrill to remove themselves from the danger. Most will want to stay, not only because this is the only home they know, but because their livelihood is here. We can't allow people to flee Adendrill and spread the plague to other places in the Midlands, or even beyond, to Dahara. It must be confined here. If people want to rush away from the city and go to the surrounding hills, separating themselves from their neighbors who they fear have the plague upon them, we must be understanding of their fears. They are to be allowed to run to the countryside if they wish, but they must remain in the area. I want our soldiers who will be in these separate units to ring the city and surrounding country, protecting all routes to and from Adendrill. The people must stay within these limits. Any person fleeing could be infected with the plague and not know it, thus endangering people in other places. As a last resort, force must be used to prevent them from taking the plague abroad. Please keep in mind that these are not malevolent people, but simply people frightened for the lives of their families. The ones who flee the city to wait out the plague will soon be short of food and succumb to starvation. Remind people to take food, as they are not likely to find it in the countryside. They will be no less dead if they die of hunger rather than plague. Remind them of this, and that looting of farms will not be tolerated. We will not allow anarchy. Well, I guess that's about all I have to say. What are your questions?
Will you be leaving tonight, my queen, Lord Rawl, or in the morning?
General Baldwin asked.
And where will you be staying?
Richard and I won't be leaving Adendrill, Colin said.
What? But you must get away,
General Baldwin insisted.
Please, both of you must escape this. We need you to lead us.
We didn't know what we were dealing with until it was too late, Colin said. We may have already been exposed to the plague.
We don't think that likely, Richard said, wanting to assuage their fears. But I must stay to see if there is any magic that will stop this plague. I will need to be going up to the keep. If we're up in the hills, we can't be of any use, and I might miss a chance of finding a solution. We will remain here and oversee the command of the city. Drefin is the high priest of the Roch Moss healers from Dahara. The Mother Confessor and I could be in no better hands. He and Nadine will be staying too, to see what relief can be brought to people.
As the men asked questions and discussed matters of food and supplies, Colin moved to the window, watching the snow and wind build in the spring storm. Richard was speaking to his men the way a commander spoke on the eve of a battle, trying to instill in them a sense of purpose, to harden them to the battle ahead. As in any battle, death would run rampant. Despite what Drefin believed about the plague not being able to build to full strength in the cold weather, Colin knew that it wasn't true in this case. This was no ordinary plague. This was a plague started by magic, by a man who wanted to kill them all. Down in the pit, Chigang had called it Jala the Chin, the game of life. Chigang was incensed that Richard had changed the ball to a lighter one so that all the children could enjoy playing instead of just the strongest, the most brutal. Chigang started the killing with those children. It was no accident. It was a message. It was the game of life. This would be Jagang's world, ruled by such savagery if he won. Chapter 33. For the next hour, the men asked questions, mostly of Drefin. The two generals offered suggestions to Richard regarding command and logistics. Options were briefly discussed, plans were made, and officers were assigned duties. The army was to begin moving that very night. There were a great many Blood of the Fold who had surrendered, and although they had since sworn loyalty to Richard, it was still thought wise to divide them, too, sending some with each unit rather than letting them remain together. Richard concurred with the suggestion. When at last they had all departed to begin the work, Richard dropped heavily into his chair. He had come a long way from being a woods guide. Colin was proud of him. She opened her mouth to say so, but Nadine spoke the words in her stead. Richard mumbled a flat, "Thanks." Nadine tentatively touched her fingertips to the back of his shoulder.
"Richard, you were always, I don't know, Richard to me, a boy from home, a woods guide. Today, and especially tonight, with all those important men, I think I saw you differently for the first time. You really are this Lord Rahl."
Richard put his elbows on the table before him and his face in his hands. "I think I'd rather be at the bottom of the cliff, buried with the Temple of the Winds."
"Don't be silly," she whispered.
Bristling, Colin moved to his side. Nadine glided away.
"Richard," Colin said, "you have to get some sleep. Now. You promised. We need you strong. If you don't get some sleep..."
"I know." He pushed away from the table and stood. He turned to Drefin and Nadine. "Do either of you have anything to make a person go to sleep? I've tried. Lately I just lie there. My mind won't be quiet." "A Feng Shan disharmony," Drefin announced at once. "You bring it on yourself with the way you push past the limits of your body. There are bounds to what we can do, and if..."
"Drefin,"
Richard said, cutting him off with a gentle voice, "I know what you mean, but I do what I must. You just have to understand that. Jagang is trying to kill us all. It will do me no good to be as high-spirited as a squirrel in spring if it means we all end up dead." Drefin grunted. "I understand, but that doesn't get you strong." "So I'll try to be good later. What about going to sleep tonight?"
"Meditation," Drefin said. "That will calm your energy flows and begin bringing them into harmony."
Richard rubbed his brow. "Drefin, hundreds of thousands of people are in danger of dying because Jagang wants to put the whole of the world under his boot. He's shown us that he has no bounds to his determination. He started the killing with children." Richard's knuckles turned white as his hands fisted. "Just to send me a message. Children. He has no conscience. He's showing me what he's willing to do to win, to make me surrender. He thinks it will break me." In contrast to his knuckles, Richard's face had gone scarlet. "He's wrong. I'd never give our people over to that kind of tyrant. Never. I'll do whatever I must to stop this plague. I swear it." The room rang with the sudden silence. Colin had never seen Richard angry in quite this way. When he had the deadly fury of the Sword of Truth's magic in his eyes, the object of his rage was usually at hand. The rage was invoked by and directed at a palpable threat. This was frustrated anger at an invisible enemy.
There was no threat he could get his hands on now. He had no direct way to fight it. Colin could see in his eyes that this anger wasn't the magic of the sword. This was purely Richard's rage. His face finally cooled. He took a calming breath as he wiped a hand across his face. He regained control of his voice.
If I try to meditate, I will only see those sick and dead children again in my mind. Please, I can't bear to see that in my sleep. I need to go to sleep and not have dreams.
Go to sleep and not have dreams? You are bothered by dreams?
Nightmares. I have them all day, too, when I'm awake, but they're real. The dreamwalker can't enter my dreams, but he has found a way to give me nightmares nonetheless. Please, dear spirits, at least when I'm asleep, grant me some peace.
A sure sign of a Fengshan meridian disharmony, Greffin confirmed to himself. I can see that you are going to be a difficult patient, but not without cause.
He slipped the bone pin from the loop of leather and opened the flap on one of the pouches at his belt. He pulled out a few leather purses. He put one back.
No, that will kill pain but not be much aid to sleep.
He sniffed another.
No, that will make you vomit.
He searched his other things and finally closed the flaps on the pouches.
I'm afraid I didn't bring anything so simple with me. I only brought rare items.
Richard sighed.
Thanks for trying, anyway.
Jeffin turned to Nadine. She was bottled zeal, pressing her lips together with restrained delight as the others talked.
The things you gave Yonick's mother wouldn't be strong enough for Richard, Jeffin said to her. Do you have any hops?
Sure,
she said calmly, but obviously pleased that someone had at last asked her.
In tincture, of course.
Perfect, Jeffin said. He slapped Richard on the back.
You can meditate another time. Tonight you will be asleep in no time. Nadine will fix you a preparation. I'll go start checking with the staff and giving them my recommendations.
Don't forget to meditate, Richard muttered as Dreffen departed.
Verdeen remained behind, studying the journal as Nadine, Tara, Raina, Ulick, Egan, and Colin all followed Richard to his room, not far away. Ulick and Egan took up posts outside in the hall. The rest of them went into the room with Richard. Inside, Richard tossed his gold cloak over a chair. He pulled the baldric over his head and laid the Sword of Truth atop it. He wearily drew his gold-trimmed tunic over his head and removed his shirt, leaving him with a black, armless undershirt. Nadine watched from the corner of her eye while she softly counted each drop aloud as it dripped into a glass of water. Richard flopped down on the edge of the bed.
Kara, would you pull my boots off for me, please?
Kara rolled her eyes.
Do I look like a valet?
She squatted to the task when Richard smiled. He leaned back on his elbows.
Tell Berdine that I want her to look for any reference to this Mountain of the Four Winds place. See what else she can find out about it.
Kara looked up from his feet.
What a brilliant idea!
She said with mock enthusiasm.
I bet she would never have thought of that on her own, all wise and knowing master.
All right. I guess I'm not needed.
How's my magic potion coming over there?
Just finished,
Nadine said in a cheery voice. Kara grunted as she yanked off his other boot.
Undo your pants and I'll pull them off too.
Richard scowled down at her.
I'll manage, thank you.
Kara smirked to herself as he rolled off the bed and went to Nadine. She handed him the glass of water with the tincture of hops. She had put something else in the glass of water, too.
Don't drink it all. I put in 50 drops. That's way more than you should need, but I wanted to leave you with extra. Drink about a third, and then if you wake in the night, you can always drink another swallow or two. I put in some valerian and skullcap, too, to help ensure you go into a deep and dreamless sleep.
Richard downed half of it. His face contorted.
As bad as this tastes, it will put me to sleep or else kill me.
Nadine smiled at him.
You'll sleep like a baby.
Babies don't sleep all that well, from what I've heard.
Nadine laughed in a soft lilt.
You'll sleep, Richard, I promise. If you wake too early, just take a little more.
Thanks. He sat down on the edge of the bed, looking from one woman to the next. I'll manage with my pants, I swear. Kara rolled her eyes and headed for the door, urging Nadine along before her. Colin kissed his cheek.
Get in bed. I'll come back in and tuck you in and kiss you goodnight as soon as I see to the guards.
Raina followed Colin out and closed the door. Nadine was waiting, rocking back and forth on her heels.
How's the arm? Do you need a poultice?
My arm is much better, Colin said. I think it's fine now, but thank you for asking. Colin clasped her hands and stood watching Nadine. Kara watched Nadine. Raina watched Nadine. Nadine's gaze moved from one woman to the next. She glanced to Ulrich and Egan, who were watching her too.
All right, then. Good night.
Good night, Colin, Kara, and Raina said as one. They watched as Nadine strolled off. I still say you should have let me kill her, Kara said under her breath. I may yet let you, Colin said. She knocked on the door. Richard, you in bed?
Yes.
Kara started to follow as Colin opened the door. Colin turned. I'll only be a minute. I don't think he can spoil my honor in a minute. Kara frowned. With Lord Rawl, anything is possible. Raina laughed and slapped Kara's arm, making her leave Colin be. I wouldn't worry. With what we've seen today, neither of us would be in the mood, Colin said. She shut the door. A single candle was lit. Richard was covered to his stomach. Colin sat on the edge of the bed and took his hand. She held it to her heart.
Are you terribly disappointed? He asked.
Richard, we will be married. I've waited my whole life for you. We're together, that's all that really matters.
Richard smiled. His tired eyes sparkled.
Well, not all.
Colin couldn't help smiling herself. She kissed his knuckles.
Just as long as you know that I understand, she said. I didn't want you to go to sleep thinking I was heartbroken that we can't be married just now. We'll be married when we can.
He put his other hand to the back of her neck and pulled her into a gentle kiss. She laid a hand on his bare chest, feeling his warm flesh, his breathing, his heartbeat. If she hadn't been so devastated by the suffering children she had seen that day, the feel of him would have ignited longing in her own breast.
I love you,
she whispered.
I love you, now, and always, he whispered back.
She blew out the candle.
Sleep well, my love.
Kara eyed Colin suspiciously as she closed the door. That was 2 minutes. Colin ignored Kara's little jab.
Raina, would you guard Richard's room until you go to bed and then have a guard posted?
Yes, Mother Confessor.
Ulrich, Egan, with that sleep potion, Richard may not be able to awake if he were in danger. I'd like one of you to be here when Raina goes to bed.
Ulrich folded his massive arms.
Mother Confessor, neither of us has any intention of leaving this spot as long as Lord Rawl is asleep.
Egan pointed at the floor against the opposite wall.
One of us can take a nap if need be. We'll both be here. Don't be concerned for Lord Rawl's safety while he is sleeping.
Thank you, all of you. One other thing. Nadine isn't to be allowed into his room for any reason, none whatsoever.
They all nodded in satisfaction. Colin turned to the blonde-headed Mord Sith.
Kara, go get Verdine. I'm going to get a cloak. Both of you should bring your cloaks, too. It's a foul night.
And where are we going?
I'll meet you both out in the stables.
The stables? Why do you want to go out there? It's time for dinner.
Kara would never really balk at a duty over a matter so petty as dinner. She was suspicious.
Grab something from the kitchens that we can take with us, then.
Kara clasped her hands behind her back.
Where are we going?
For a ride.
A ride. Mother Confessor, where are we going?
The Wizard's Keep.
Both Kara and Raina lifted an eyebrow. Kara's surprise turned to a frown of disapproval.
Does Lord Rawl know that you want to go up to the keep?
Of course not. If I had told him why I'm going, he would have insisted on going too. He needs sleep, so I didn't tell him. And why are we going? Because the Temple of the Winds is gone. The wizards who did it were put on trial. There are records in the keep of all the trials held there. I want to find that record. Tomorrow, Richard can read it over after he's gotten some sleep. It could help him. Ah, makes sense, going to the wizard's keep after dark. I will go get Berdine and some food and meet you in the stables. We'll make a picnic of it,
Kara said with blithe sarcasm. Chapter 34 Colin batted the big wet snowflakes from her lashes and pulled the hood of her cloak forward as she considered the foolishness of not thinking to change out of her white confessor's dress. She stood in the stirrups, reached between her legs, and pulled more of the back of the dress under her bare legs to protect them from the cold saddle. Fortunately, her boots were high enough that hiking up the dress to sit in the saddle didn't expose her calves to the wind. She was glad, though, to be back on Nick, the big war horse her Gallian soldiers had given her. Nick was an old friend. Kara and Berdine looked just as uncomfortable as she, but Colin knew that it was because they feared going to a place of magic. They had been in the wizard's keep before. They didn't want to return. Back at the stables, they had tried to talk her out of it. Colin had reminded them of a plague. Nick's ears twitched even before the dark shapes of soldiers appeared out of the swirling snow to challenge them. Colin knew they had reached the stone bridge. The soldiers were posted just to the city side of it. The men sheathed their swords when Kara growled at them, pleased to have someone handy upon whom to vent her foul mood.
"Terrible night to be out, Mother Confessor,"
one of the soldiers said, happy to address someone other than the Mord Sith.
"Terrible night to be stationed out here," she said.
The man looked back over his shoulder.
"Any night you station and watch up here at the keep is a terrible night."
Colin smiled. "The keep looks sinister, soldier, but it's not as bad as it looks."
"If you say so, Mother Confessor. Myself, I think I'd just as soon stand guard over the underworld itself."
"No one has tried to get in the keep, have they?"
"If they had, you'd have heard about it or found our bodies, Mother Confessor."
Colin urged her big stallion on. Nick snorted and surged ahead on the slick snow. She trusted him in such conditions and let him lead the way. Kara and Berdine both swayed easily in their saddles as they followed behind. Back in the stables, Kara had snatched her horse's bit, looked the animal in the eye, and ordered it not to give her any trouble. Colin had the odd feeling that the bay mare understood the warning. Colin could just see the stone walls at the sides of the bridge. Just as well that the horses couldn't see the chasm beyond. She knew Nick wouldn't spook, but she wasn't sure about the other two. The sheer rock walls of the yawning abyss dropped for thousands of feet. Unless you had wings, there was only this one way into the wizard's keep. In the snowy darkness, the vast keep, its soaring walls of dark stone, its ramparts, bastions, towers, connecting passageways and bridges, all blended into the inky darkness of the side of the mountain into which it was built. To those without magic, or those who didn't understand magic, the keep presented an unmistakable spectacle of sinister menace. Colin had grown up in Aidendrill and had been up to the keep uncountable times, more often than not, alone. Even as a child, she had been allowed to go alone to the keep, as were the other young confessors. When she was little, wizards had tickled her and chased her through the halls, laughing with her. The keep was a second home to her, comfortably safe, welcoming, and protective. She knew, though, that there were dangers in the keep, just as in any home. A home could be a safe, welcoming place, as long as one wasn't foolish enough to walk into the hearth. There were places in the keep you didn't walk into either. It was only when she was older that she no longer went to the keep alone. When a confessor became older, it was dangerous to go anywhere alone. After a confessor had begun taking confessions, it wasn't safe for her to be without the protection of her wizard. When she was older, a confessor earned enemies. Family of the condemned rarely believed that a loved one had committed violent crimes, or they blamed confessors for the man's death sentence, even though she was only the means of confirming its justice. There were always attempts on the lives of confessors. There was no shortage of people from commoners to kings wanting a confessor dead.
"How are we going to go through the shields without Lord Rawl?" Verdine asked. "His magic enabled us to pass through before. We won't be able to get through the shields."
Colin smiled assurance to the two moored Sith.
"Richard didn't know where he was going. He just blundered through the keep, going where he needed to go on instinct. I know the ways to go that don't require magic to pass. There may be a few mild shields that will keep people out, but I can pass those. If I can pass, then I can get you through them by touching you when you pass through, the same way Richard took you through the more powerful shields."
Kara grunted disagreeably. She had been hoping that the shields would stop them.
"Kara, I've been in the keep thousands of times. It's perfectly safe. We're just going to the libraries. Just as you are my protector out in the world, in the keep I will be yours. We are sisters of the Aegil. I won't let you get anywhere near dangerous magic. Trust me?"
"Well, I guess you are a sister of the Aegil. I can trust a sister of the Aegil."
They passed under the huge portcullis and onto the keep grounds. Once inside the massive outer walls, the snow melted as it touched the ground. Colin pushed back her hood. Inside the walls, it was warm and comfortable. She shook the snow from her cloak and took a deep breath of the spring fresh air, filling her lungs with the familiar soothing scent. Nick whinnied agreeably. Colin led the two moored Sith across the stretch of gravel and stone chips to the arched opening in the wall that tunneled under part of the keep. As they passed through the long passageway, the lamps hanging from Kara and Verdine's saddles lit the arched stone around them in an orange glow.
"Why are we going through here?" Kara asked. "Lord Rawl took us in that big door back there." "I know. That's one reason you're afraid of the keep. That was a very dangerous way to go in. I'm taking us to the way I usually enter. It's much better, you'll see. It's not the way visitors entered either, but the way used by those who lived and worked here. The public came in at a different door, a place where they were greeted by a guide who saw to their wants."
Beyond the tunnel, all three horses eyed the expensive paddock, lush with grass. The gravel road ran beside the wall that held the main entrance to the keep, with a fence on the other side of the road enclosing the paddock. To the left, part of the paddock was bounded by the walls of the keep, rather than a fence. At the rear were stables. Colin dismounted and opened the gate. After removing saddles and tack, all three of them turned their horses loose in the paddock, where they could crop grass and frisk in the mild air if they wished. A dozen wide granite steps, worn smooth and swayback over the millennia, led up into a recessed entryway, to the simple but heavy double doors into the keep proper. Kara and Verdine followed behind with the lamps. The anteroom swallowed the lamplight into its vast space, only allowing the weak flames to hint at the columns and arches.
"What's that?" Verdine asked in a low whisper. "It sounds like a storm drain. There aren't rats in here, are there?"
"Actually, it's a fountain," Colin said, her voice echoing into the distance. "And yes, Kara, there are rats in the keep, but not where I'm taking you. Promise. Here, give me your lamp. Let me show you the bones of this menacing dungeon."
Colin took the lamp and strode to one of the key lamps on the wall to the right. She could walk there without the aid of the lamp. She had done it so often, but she needed the lamp's flame. She found the key lamp, tilted back the tall chimney, and lit it with the flame from Kara's lamp. The key lamp took to flame. With a succession of whooshing sounds, the rest of the lamps in the room lit, hundreds of them, two at a time, in pairs, one to each side. Each whoosh was followed almost simultaneously by another, as the lamps around the huge room took to flame from the key lamp. The light in the room grew. The effect was like turning up the wick on a lamp. In a span of seconds, the anteroom was nearly as bright as day, bathed in the mellow, yellow-orange glow of all the flames. Kara and Verdine stood slack-jawed at the sight. 100 feet overhead, the glass roof was dark, but in the day it flooded the room with warmth and light. At night, if the sky was clear, you could turn down the lamps and gaze at the stars, or let the moonlight wash the room. In the center of the tiled floor stood a cloverleaf-shaped fountain. Water shot 15 feet into the air above the top bowl to cascade down each successive tier into ever wider scalloped bowls, finally running from evenly spaced points in the bottom one in perfectly matched arcs into the lower pool. An outer wall of variegated white marble was wide enough to act as a bench. Verdeen stepped down one step of the five that ringed the room.
"It's beautiful,"
she whispered in astonishment. Kara gazed about at the red marble columns holding the arches below the balcony that ran all the way around the oval-shaped room. She had a smile on her lips.
"This is nothing like the place Lord Rawl took us,"
Kara frowned.
"The lamps? That was magic. There is magic in here. You said you would keep us away from magic." "I said I would keep you away from dangerous magic. The lamps are kind of like a shield, except in reverse. Instead of keeping people out, they're an enabling shield to welcome and help them enter. It's a friendly kind of magic, Kara."
"Friendly. Sure. Come on. We came here for a purpose. We have work to do."
Colin took them to the libraries via the elegant, warm halls, rather than the frightening way they had gone before. They encountered only 3 shields. Colin's magic allowed her to pass these, and by holding Kara and Verdeen's hands it was possible to get them through too, though both complained about a tingling sensation. These shields didn't guard dangerous areas, and so were weaker than others in the keep. There were shields that Colin couldn't pass, like the ones Richard had taken her through to go down to the slip, though Colin thought there might be other ways to get down there. There were shields which Richard had gone through that in her experience no wizard had ever crossed before. They came to an intersection with a hall of light pink stone running down both sides. At places, the hall opened into commodious rooms ringed with padded benches for conversing or reading. Beyond double doors in each of these large outer rooms was a library.
"I've been here," Verdeen said. "I remember this." "Yes, Richard brought you here, but by a different route."
This is the end of Side 1, Part B.